Well, so much for the recovery summer, but let the debate begin as the August unemployment numbers out this morning cap off a mixed but mostly dreary summer for the national economy. And yet it may not be a double-dip recession summer, and today's numbers are actually better than feared. The stock market, as you just heard on the news, is up, the Dow up over 100 points. It's not recovery summer either, as the president and his people hoped it would be, at least not in the short run. But let's take a closer look at these numbers and the big picture. We'll get a more liberal and more conservative view now of all of this from James Parrott, Deputy Director and Chief Economist of the liberal-leaning Fiscal Policy Institute, a New York-oriented think tank, and Douglas Holtz-Eakin, former Senior Policy Advisor to the McCain for President campaign, former Director of the Congressional Budget Office, currently a member of the Financial Crisis Inquiry Commission, and President of the American Action Forum. James and Doug, welcome back to both of you. Hello.
Thank you.
And Douglas Holtz-Eakin, the report says the country lost 54,000 jobs in August, but predictions were it would be twice that bad. And I see that more than 120,000 census jobs were lost. That means the private sector must have created about 70,000. There were 27,000 new manufacturing jobs, 19,000 new construction jobs, which I gather was a pleasant surprise. So if it's not recovery summer, is it setting up a possible recovery fall?
Well, I certainly think this should calm fears about an immediate double-dip recession. My view of the August report is that it's more of the same. It's very much like the July report. If you strip out census hiring and firing, you've got a private sector that's grinding along, creating a minimal number of jobs, 50, 60, 70,000 a month. Inside this report, there are actually glimmers that are a bit stronger than the July report. There was some temporary help hiring that's usually a leading indicator. We saw 500,000 people return to the labor force. Previous months, we'd seen a lot of discouraged workers leaving. So one could look at this and say, geez, you know, it's not great, but there's some glimmers. The trouble is, we have had this pattern of glimmers, but no real strong recovery. We've been growing for about a year. We're growing too slowly, and it offers very little hope to the millions of people who are out of work.
James Parrott, same question.
I have to agree with Doug on this up to this point. Certainly, you know, it doesn't look like the economy is headed for a double-dip recession. We have had some growth. It's been more or less steady if you take out the federal government census hiring. But as Doug said, it's very slow, very weak. It implies that unemployment, which is still very high, 9.6%, it inched up a little bit in August because of people returning to the labor force, which can be interpreted as a positive sign. People are a little more optimistic about the chances of finding a job. But the fact is, we still have 25 million Americans unemployed or underemployed. That's one out of every six. Long-term unemployment is still very high. We've only gained back, since jobs started to grow at the beginning of the year, about 650,000 jobs. It would be nice if we could see, you know, that magnitude of job growth every month or two. That's what we really need, given that we lost 8.5 million jobs during the downturn.
James, what about for New York, from your point of view? We had Greg David from Cranes and CUNY last week, and I'm going to play you a clip saying the New York economy is actually doing great, unlike the rest of the nation. You're with a New York economy think tank, so I want to get your reaction to this.
Well, I'm sorry, but we're doing great, to be frank. First of all, the Great Recession nationally, we lost 8.4 million jobs. In New York, depending on how you count, we lost 160,000. On percentage terms, we lost half the percent. Our loss here is half what the rest of the nation is. We got really strong numbers last week. So far this year, New York has gained 77,000 jobs. In July alone, the gain in New York accounts for one-fifth of all the jobs gained in the whole country.
So, James Parrott, are you as upbeat as Greg David about New York?
I wish I could be as upbeat as Greg is about that. Certainly, we've seen better job growth in New York City this year than we have in a long time when the economy is coming out of an economic downturn. Oftentimes, New York City lags coming out of a downturn. New York City's done better than the nation so far. You know, but the jobs are sort of the jobs that we've been adding, partly in the professional and technical services area, good jobs like in law firms and accounting and management consulting and so on. But a lot of the job growth has been retail sales jobs coming back, or an increase in food service employment or hotels related to tourism, which has been pretty strong in recent months. So, you know, a lot of the jobs that we've been added don't pay that much. That's reflected in the fact that there's a real disparity in earnings increases over the last 3 years in New York City. Professional and managerial workers have done all right on the whole. Their median wages are up about 10%. But non-managerial, non-professional workers have seen an erosion in their weekly earnings, partly because many of them are hourly paid and they're working fewer hours than before, but partly also because their real hourly earnings have not been keeping up.
Doug, your focus is national, but I'm just curious, have you looked at all at New York or the region?
I haven't looked at New York in particular, but the difference doesn't surprise me. One of the really striking features of this recession, which was so deep, was that it was so broad. I mean, in many recessions, some states never really experience declining incomes or declining output. Employment stays pretty steady. In this instance, everybody was hit. And we are now starting to see across the United States differential patterns of recovery. And that is far more typical of what goes on than the sort of uniform bleak nature of what we had for about a year. So the big question mark that remains is, will we see labor sort of moving to the better labor markets? Are people going to be able to sell their house, pick up, go to the places where there's better opportunity, or will the housing difficulties that so many people have keep them grounded in some of the states and the localities that aren't doing very well?
Now, having both of you here gives us an opportunity to talk policy as well as analyze the numbers. Doug, you're a Republican, you advise the McCain campaign, et cetera. But how critical are you of the president's economic policies to date? Many economists say both the TARP and the stimulus, unpopular as they are, have been successes in terms of preventing a bad recession from becoming a depression. What's your take?
So I think that in order, the most important policy moves have been made by the Federal Reserve, which deserves a gold star for the rapid and innovative development of all sorts of credit facilities in the midst of the financial crisis. The next would be the TARP, which, despite its terrible public reputation, was a necessary form of intervention. I didn't love the way they did it, but we had to do something with the large banks. And then I think the stimulus should have the least credit. The real problem with the stimulus is that it is misdiagnosing the problem. This is basically a balance sheet recession. People's homes became less valuable. Their portfolios got hammered. They had a lot of debt. There's nothing about Keynesian stimulus that's going to solve that problem. We need to look at the United States right now not as an economy that needs sort of a one-shot stimulus that will jumpstart things. Instead, it has a long-term growth problem. It is growing. It's been growing for a year. It's growing too slowly. And we need to do things which we will not then have to turn around and unwind. We need to do things that we're going to want to do forever, permanent improvements in our policy that will make us grow faster. That's what we need.
James, same question.
Well, again, I agree with a lot of what Doug said, although I have to take exception to what he said about the stimulus not being the right medicine for the ills that we faced in late 2008. I'd like to know what Doug has to say about what should have been done if the stimulus wasn't applied in the magnitude that it was. But first, let me say that I agree that what we've seen is not just a cyclical downturn in the economy, where we can expect the economy to rebound, you know, more or less on its own, given sufficient time, without keeping unemployment too high for too long. I think we have serious structural problems. In 2007, 2008, we had a serious financial crisis, heavily related to the housing bubble, but also reflecting other problems connected to the lack of regulation in the financial markets. But we also saw the culmination of a serious structural inadequacy in the economy that led to most workers not being able to share in the fruits of productivity that the national economy created. That created a situation where too often much of the growth that we've had in the last, you know, not just in the night, you know, this is not just in the 2000s under George Bush for many years, but going back into the 1990s, too often we've had an economy where we require one form or another of asset bubble to provide the economic growth that provides jobs and rising incomes. We need to have a more balanced approach to economic growth where workers can share in the prosperity that they've created. This means we have to address the intense income polarization that's at historic levels in the United States and certainly in New York City.
So what would you each do next? First at the national level, James?
Well, I think we need to think about what sort of additional stimulus we have. Businesses are not investing, they're not hiring, they're not expanding. I think that's because they don't have customers. And they don't have customers because people aren't buying because there's such a weak employment situation. Unemployment is almost 10%, and the prospect is it's going to stay, you know, in the 9% range for a couple of years. So that's untenable. How do we get job growth going quickly? I think we need additional stimulus. The first stimulus package wasn't perfect. I think we need to fine-tune that. We need to have measures that lead to, you know, near-term additional jobs. We need to do more in order to prevent state and local governments from cutting their budgets in ways that reduce employment. A lot of the employment decline we've seen that continues in 2010 as state and local governments laying off workers because of the intense budget pressures they face. We need to provide additional assistance to a lot of low-income workers who are not even qualifying for TANF anymore, the public assistance program that used to be called AFDC. We reformed that in a way that very few people can qualify for that. That's not the only thing we need to do, but we need to recognize that there need to be ways to increase the incomes of a lot of workers and working people in the country.
Doug, same question.
I think at this point we need to look forward and put in place a genuine plan to solve the fiscal threat at the federal level, reductions in future spending, a path to stabilizing the debt so that we can take off the table the real risk of either international lenders imposing very draconian lending rates to the U.S., or the business community's fear that we'll solve this with an enormous tax hike in the future. So that requires just some conscious effort for reforms at the federal level. Step two, we need to recognize that this is about growth, that we have to ask our small and large businesses to focus on production and hiring people and selling. Let's get back in the game at trade agreements so we can sell around the world. We've been on the sidelines too long. That's a ripe area for us to do better. And let's stop asking our firms to be the vessels for all the social benefits, the health insurance, the pensions. That's a legacy of the 30s, 40s, 50s that I don't think is feasible in the 21st century. Those have to be done in another way. And then, you know, let's be realistic that it's going to take time, but the fundamental problem with the big inequalities we face is that our schools are failing our kids, and they are not arriving in the labor force with the skills to compete either domestically or internationally. All the evidence is education and skills equals income. We need to do better.
Douglas Holtz-Eakin, former senior policy advisor to Senator John McCain with us, former director of the Congressional Budget Office, currently a member of the Financial Crisis Inquiry Commission and president of the American Action Forum. Also James Parrott, deputy director and chief economist of the Liberal Fiscal Policy Institute, a New York-oriented think tank. As we take stock of today's August jobs report release and the big picture of the economy, Doug, while you're here, you're on the Financial Crisis Inquiry Commission. We'll have the chairman, Phil Angelides, coming on later in the month, a Democrat. Do you think the Democrats and Republicans on the commission are coming to very different conclusions, or are we going to see some kind of real unified report on how we got into this mess?
Well, as it turns out, I'm actually at a commission meeting. I've stepped out to do this call, and I'm going to go back and rejoin. We owe a report by December 15th. We have 10 people who have deep interest and bring different backgrounds to this topic, and there are, in fact, real differences of opinion on the commission, but they're not partisan. They're about the nature of what went on, the degree to which different factors contributed to the crisis, and we're working hard to resolve those differences, but it's been characterized as a partisan affair. I would praise both Phil Angelides and Bill Thomas, the chairman and vice chairman, for their efforts to turn it into something which may have disagreements, but they're certainly not about politics.
What are those big factions or, on an ideas level? Like, what does one group think happened that the other group thinks maybe that wasn't so important and vice versa?
Well, I'll give you an example. If you look at the U.S. Financial regulation system, I think there's a lot of consensus that there are gaps in the regulatory structure, that there were multiple regulators and the possibility for essentially regulatory arbitrage. You try to find the easy regulation. We agree on that. What we disagree about is the degree to which that caused the crisis. My own view is that had we had a nearly perfect safety and soundness regulatory system, it quite likely would have been overwhelmed regardless. And if you look around the globe, very different regulatory systems, whether it's the United Kingdom with the FSA or in Germany with a very different and closer relationship between banks and state, crises occurred in very different regulatory settings. So my own view is that can't be the important factor. It's something else. Not everyone agrees.
And James, before you go, what about policy at the local level? If New York's economy is doing better than the nation, but obviously we still have major challenges, both in inequality as well as total numbers of jobs and foreclosures and et cetera, how do you see the lines of debate shaping up after the Albany election?
Well, first of all, it's not clear how long New York City can sustain its better employment growth than the nation without significant employment growth at a national level elsewhere around the country, because to some extent we're creating jobs here because we have national-oriented companies that serve the national economy. So if the national economy remains exceptionally weak, we're not going to get the continued impetus for sustained job growth in New York City. So our fate really is tied to what happens at the national level. But there are things that we can do in New York State, both in Albany and New York City. I think first and foremost, we need to recognize that New York's economic challenges are not fundamentally a problem because of overspending in Albany or the high level of taxation in New York City and New York State. You know, if you look at New York's performance relative to other states, we've done very well. So is it that the tax and spending systems are even more out of line in other states? Well, you know, certainly we could argue about states like California and Illinois and so on, but New York did better than 40 states around the country. So our economic challenge is similar to what we experience at a national level, and it's not so much that spending and taxes are out of control in New York. So we need to be careful about how we address the continuing severe budget challenges in Albany and New York City, not do rash things, not dramatically cut spending. In terms of economic policies, there are things that we can do at both levels that will push the private sector in the direction of creating better jobs rather than being indifferent to the quality of jobs that are created. And one of the most pressing things that's needed, given that New York City spends something like $2 billion a year in the name of economic development to support job growth, we really should be linking job standards that require decent-paying jobs with benefits in exchange for the assistance that we give to companies.
All right. James Parrott and Douglas Holtz-Eakin, we thank you both very much for coming on with us today on the occasion of the release of the August job numbers. Again, the headline this morning, 54,000 jobs lost nationally in August, but predictions were it would be twice that bad. And with 120,000 temporary census jobs lost, that means the private sector created about 70,000 jobs, 27,000 new manufacturing jobs, 19,000 new construction jobs, which was a pleasant surprise. And the Dow so far is up more than 100 points on this news. Brian Lehrer on WNYC. Coming up next, New York City public advocate Bill de Blasio's new list of the worst New York City landlords. Stay tuned.